IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy, where we discuss policy issues of importance. Today, we are going to talk about the obesity burden in India and what the NFHS data talks about it. And to discuss this with me, I have my colleague, Harshit. Welcome to this podcast, Harshit. It's so good to have you here.
Hey, Priyal. How are you?
I'm good. So glad that you've joined me in this conversation. Harshit has a degree in medicine, so we thought that, you know, him being here would be the best. So we know that technically obesity was not considered like a Indian problem, and it was considered very specifically the Western issue, right? And over the past few years, we have noticed that obesity is now slowly becoming a growing concern in the country. Now, before we go into like what exactly the NFHS data talks about obesity, Harshit, can you tell us what exactly this NFHS survey is and what are the findings of this survey with respect to like obesity and other issues, and what exactly does the survey talk about?
So NFHS, International Family and Health Survey, it has been done, I think, from somewhere around 1992 at a regular interval of 5-6 years.
Hmm.
The latest one was 19 to 21. It's like usually done in 1 year,
right?
But because of the pandemic, it got like a little stressed.
Okay.
It's like 19 to 21.
Yeah.
So this is basically a survey in which the government, basically the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, sends out people to collect data. They have a long, it's a pretty long questionnaire. They have a long questionnaire in which they ask you all kinds of questions. They ask you, for instance, how many times did you have urinated during last week? They ask you what kind of contraceptives do you use. They ask you how much do you eat. They try to like gauge malnutrition, stunting, anemia, all kinds of health related indicators.
Right.
And basically they also try to include things like marriage, age at marriage. So it's Slowly, they are trying to...
Pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, it's like pretty comprehensive. Although people tend to like make a lot of... So the thing is, the sample size is not quite good enough to make micro inferences.
Okay, okay.
I mean, at the district level, even at for some indicators at the state level, it's the survey is good for trends because it is the only reliable sort of like survey or data we have, which is like updated every 5 years. Has a set methodology, and you could, it's like the most reliable thing we have, but it's
right,
but it is not good for like micro level indicators.
Okay, right. So, like, when it comes to the survey, what does it actually talk about, like obesity? Does it specifically mention obesity, and you know, it does it give out like specific numbers about it for our country?
Yeah, so there are a lot of interesting findings from the survey. So, it says that obesity has increased in almost all the states and union territories. And now we have a larger proportion of overweight children. It's like from around 2% in 2015-16 to around 3.4-3.5% right now.
Right.
And it also says that, so there's a difference between being overweight and being obese. So according to a survey and according to WHO guidelines and a lot of literature in medicine, if your BMI, body mass index, is somewhere is between 25 and 30, you're overweight. And if it is above 30, then you're obese. So the survey also makes, like, sort of it differentiates between the two. But what people tend to focus on is more than 25.
Right,
because,
right.
The proportion of people who are more than 30 is, like, not as large as what we see in developed countries. There are a lot of interesting findings. For instance, if you come in the top 10%, you're four times more likely to be overweight if you come in the poorest. It's basically, to simplify, it's like the more wealthy you get, the more the chances increase of you having a larger BMI.
Right.
So it's a little opposite to what we see in Western countries, because in some countries, in places in Europe, you see that the poor are more obese because they don't have access to healthy food.
Right, right.
But India is right now at a place in its trajectory where poor don't have access to food, and the rich have access to more food and they're moving less.
You're right.
So everything adds up and you have the rich being more overweight.
Yeah. They have more access to more food and, you know, different varieties of food, right? Whereas for the poor, they are dependent on basic like food is their basic bare minimum necessity that they may not have access to.
Yeah, in India, you can see what is called as a double burden.
Right.
So we have people who are at this end of the spectrum, who are like deficient in nutrition, undernutrition, they have undernutrition. And now we also have a growing proportion of people who are overweight.
Right.
We now have to deal with both of them. We also have to deal with people who are underweight, help them out. And we also have to deal with people who are overweight. And with being overweight, there are a lot of problems that come with it.
Right. And like in generally, I think in the past, India has focused mainly on malnutrition, right? The government has mainly focused on malnutrition and it made sense, I think, 10 to 15 years ago. Even I think until 2010, it would make sense for us to have schemes on malnutrition and stuff like that. And we have schemes targeted very specifically towards like the poor people as well as like even have focusing mainly on different age groups of kids, starting from pregnant women to nursing women to, you know, young babies as starting from 0 to like 18 months to 36 months and are going to like toddlers, early school going kids. So multiple different schemes have been introduced in our country in the past and it is still ongoing. Just because we understand now that obesity is a growing concern, we are not dismissing the fact that malnutrition is still a problem in our country. But like one of the things that I wanted to ask you, Harshit, was why do we consider, you know, obesity to be such a rich world problem and that, you know, it's not something that India has sort of like wrapped its head around that this is a growing concern, according to you?
So if you talk about like a few decades ago, around maybe 15, 20, 25 years back, this was somewhat true. We were like the burden of undernutrition, the burden of not having enough food, the diseases associated with not getting enough nutrition, enough calories was quite large. And like, if you like look at pictures of your grandparents and maybe if you look at pictures of your people of your grandparents' generation, you'll see that most of them, it would be quite difficult to find or your great-parents' parents. It would be like quite difficult to find people who are on the higher side of the BMI. But if you look around today, you'll see that a lot of people, at least people in our strata who are like urban, middle class, upper class, like comfortable, we have access to food and our jobs don't require us to do like a lot of manual labor. Our energy expenditure is like quite less. You'll see a lot of people who are obese or overweight.
Right.
So this was previously a Western concern. But today, so the interesting thing is around 65-70% of obese people now live in low and middle income countries.
Oh, okay.
So from the high income countries, the developed countries, this problem is
now moving also this. Yeah,
they also have this problem right now. But if you look at figures, particularly from North America, basically from the United States, you'll see that obesity is a large, large concern of theirs. So yeah, I think it has more to do with changing of lifestyles, urbanization, access to fast food, and our food having more oil, sugar, carbohydrates packed into it.
And also, I think occupation-wise, right, like few years ago, even up until the 90s, the main occupation was primarily agriculture and manual labor and very physically, you know, heavy lifting labor, right? And now it has moved mainly towards service sector-based jobs, which essentially requires you to like sit and do your work. Whereas, you know, a lot of work that requires intense physical labor is slowly declining. So the fact that we see this trend is actually not quite surprising. But like before we move on, one more question I wanted to ask you about the NFHS itself is, see, we understand that, you know, here they have calculated the waist to hip ratio to understand, like to identify the percentage of body fat. And with that also, so this survey is mainly a population survey, right? When we're talking about surveys like this, and when it comes to health-related issues, when we're talking about obesity and malnutrition and everything, it differs from person to person and stuff. So in this kind of sense, How does this, you know, what is the significance of doing such a huge survey and like relying solely on numbers?
So, yeah, so I think what you're talking about is basically the difference between sort of a community approach and a individual.
Right, exactly.
If you're talking about, so the waist to hip ratio, this is the first time the survey has added this measurement. They previously used to calculate only BMI. So waist, so if you talk about waist to hip ratio, they've added this because it gives you a better idea of basically abdominal fat. So abdominal fat added with BMI gives you a way better indicator of being at risk of metabolic diseases, of diabetes, hypertension, and all and everything that is associated with obesity.
Right.
And if you talk about individual level, so at individual level, you have to take into account a lot of things. So if you only take into account BMI and you are elderly or you are very muscular, it will not give you a very good idea.
Right.
And for Indians, the latest literature points out that your BMI should be less than 23, not 25. Okay. 25 is sort of a community level old literature thing. I think it was WHO Lancet who pointed out, I cannot remember it at the back of my head. It was a very reputed organization which said that you should have a BMI which is like less than 23. And you should also look at your exercise numbers, half an hour of moderate exercise every day. You should also look at your cholesterol numbers. You should also look at your blood pressure, your sugars. You should also look at your family history. If maybe your parents or your grandparents, or if some of your cousins have a certain these kind of diseases, you should be more careful. So that is at an individual level. But I think for a country like India, it would be difficult to have such a comprehensive survey at a population level. There is a need for that, obviously. But a better approach maybe would be to integrate sort of like hospital level data to anonymized database from which you can make inferences.
Right.
That would be a good first step.
That's actually very interesting. And that's obviously, that would give us like better perspective about things, right? Because there would be a large pool of data that we could like draw inferences from. Now, before we move on, we're going to take a short break and we're going to be right back. Hello and welcome back to the episode. I was in conversation with Harshit and we were talking about the obesity burden of our country. So like as a doctor, Harshit, one of the things that I wanted to ask you or have a conversation with you about was that we know that, you know, currently we also discussed that we have access to a lot of food these days because of in varying quantities, right? So what exactly is making India so obese? And as a doctor, what are the medical effects of obesity that you see?
So obesity, to like simplify it, it's like a very crude simplification. It's because there is a mismatch between calorie consumption and energy expenditure. Okay. So now we can easily get access to dense calorie-packed food and we are not utilizing that as much.
Right.
Because we are now leading a sedentary lifestyle. Even if you talk about, obviously a portion of our population is moving towards less manual intensive jobs, less energy intensive jobs. But the ones who are already in those jobs, physical activity associated outside their work has like reduced a lot. So you do not have to like cycle to work. You have some kind of a transport which is like available if you live in a city. And even if you live in the periphery, you now have some kind of transport.
Right.
You do not have to like walk a lot.
Yeah.
The walking
in
has
a sense, you remember like when our parents used to say that we used to walk like 10 kilometers every day to reach our school and everything, whereas you guys have it easy because you have a school bus coming and picking you up from the doorstep and dropping you to the school and then bringing you back and stuff, right? So technically, our dependence on any sort of physical activity has gone down because so many things have become so easy for us, right?
Yeah, I think everybody has heard that when we walk to school. Yeah, that story, I think, has been a fixture of everybody's life. Yeah, so obviously we don't use that much energy that maybe the previous generation used, and the previous generation does not use that much energy that the previous generation used. And we now have things. So there are certain theories which go around which say that humans have a certain disposition because of our evolution for a certain kind of food. Basically, foods which are energy rich.
Right.
So what food manufacturers do is they make these foods which are energy rich. So they are already appealing to your body and they also add additives to them. So it's not always up to you that will you eat that cake or not. So it's also because by design, it's because of evolution and also because how that taste is designed, how your body basically craves sugar. It needs more. It does not seem to get like bored of sugar. So now it has become easily available. And the food, the processed food, the packaged food has a lot of
added preservatives.
Yeah. So there are a lot of calories packed in that small food item. Take for account a chocolate bar. Maybe 30, 40 grams has around 300, 400 calories.
Mm-hmm.
And you would not be satisfied by eating a small chocolate bar.
Yeah, I know. It's also like this addiction to like all these energy-rich drinks also, right? Like if just having one glass of Coca-Cola is not enough, you need to have it with every meal because you feel like it complements certain food and everything. So every time you have a pizza or a burger, you will accompany it with a heavy sugar-added Coca-Cola or Pepsi or something like that. So it's sort of like your body needs it.
So I think it was Coca-Cola or Pepsi, I don't remember. I think it was Coca-Cola. They used to put cocaine in their drinks.
Oh, yeah, it was Coca-Cola. It was Coca-Cola.
So you would literally get addicted to Coca-Cola. And obviously, advertisement and everything else has made you like very habituated to all these things.
Yeah, from
a young age, you look at baby formula. Baby formula, the feeding formula, which parents give to their children. That does not need to be sweet.
Right. Definitely.
You're making your children habituated to sweet and how to expect him to not eat sweet when when he's like 4 or 5.
Right.
You have been feeding him like sweet. He associates sweet with food.
Right.
So everything is like pushing you towards eating more sugars and eating more energy dense food. And basically your expenditure goes down. And so if you look at one extreme, you can look at US. So if you look at sizes, portion sizes, maybe you go and order a glass of Coke in a restaurant in the US and you order the same glass of Coke at a restaurant in Europe, the size difference is huge. So you will get a huge glass in the US and you will get a much smaller glass in Europe.
Wow, okay.
So the portion size also, if you get one glass, you are more likely to like finish it.
Right.
If everything is huge, you see that as normal. So if you get one glass of Coke, you drink it up.
Definitely. Definitely. And all of these like eventually causes a lot of health problems, right? Like we know that obesity is one of the main causes of like having intake of so much sugar leads to diabetes, cholesterol and everything. And at the end of the day, the country will end up having such a huge disease burden in these places that it'll become such a big problem for the country. And already India is dealing with a lot of heart-based diseases currently. We have a huge burden of those diseases already. So, you know, obesity will, this trend continues. It's going to become a huge, huge, huge problem.
Yeah, obesity does make you more likely to get diabetes and more likely to suffer from stroke, paralysis, have uncontrolled blood pressure. And obese people are more likely to get like certain kinds of cancers.
Right.
And recently, if you are obese, you are more likely to die from COVID. So obesity, it like affects all your systems, has an adverse effect on almost every part of your body. So there are problems from being obese and there are problems associated with being obese. And obesity is basically the causation of a lot of problems.
Right. Definitely. And I think, so now that we've discussed so much issues about what exactly obesity is, what it leads to and what is the cause of it and everything, how do you think we as a country should sort of move when it comes to obesity or this burden of obesity that we are apparently having?
So you cannot like basically force people to eat what you think is nutritious.
Definitely.
So people will eat whatever is cheap, tasty and accessible.
Right.
You cannot, if you say, for instance, you say broccoli is more nutritious than potatoes. This is a very crude example. So unless broccoli is at least as cheap as potatoes, and there's a change in the population which says they now accept broccoli as a part of their cuisine or as a part of their daily diet, their meals, it will not be a stable part. So if the government sort of like the government will have to regulate, because we'll have to regulate advertisement. We'll have to regulate advertisement to young children. We do not want like fast foods, which are unhealthy for children, to be sold in canteens and other places. The government will have to regulate that. The government will also have to make the general population aware of that, how harmful this X item is.
Right.
So
right.
They're like starting a program. It's called Health Star Rating. So they'll, if you look at any packaged food packet, you see at the back of the packet, there's a small label which says this has X calories.
Right.
Y,
right.
With this much fats. Yeah.
Right.
So what
right.
they're doing is they're doing a front packaging. They do the front labeling where they'll give out 5 stars.
Right.
So how healthy this is. There has been some criticism for this, that this is not enough.
You need to do
but
more.
But it's a start. It's a start. Yeah. It's a start. It's
definitely
a better direction. Yeah.
Also, I think when it comes to, you know, making people aware, I know early back in the 90s, when I was a child, we would see like this polio advertisements and everything. And I know that these advertisements in national television and everything did help significantly. It was one of the ways to sort of reach out to a wider population, right? Even with respect to overpopulation, over the past 10 to 15 years, we've seen how awareness had played a significant role in sort of, you know, convincing a lot of families to go for nuclear family rather than have a lot of children and stuff. So I think your point about, you know, making people aware is one of the first steps to go about it. And not just in terms of obesity, because with malnutrition, we're already doing it, right? But even with now, along with malnutrition, focusing also, giving some amount of attention even to obesity and talking about the problems associated with it and where the problem lies, I think is one of the initial ways to go about it.
Yeah, so I think the polio program, the advertisement played a huge role in making people come to the vaccination stations. Yes, we do need sort of a push from the government which says that, oh, so don't eat this,
right.
Exercise more and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
So something along those lines. And so the thing with polio was it was like super accessible.
Right.
You also have to make healthy food accessible and like cheap.
Right.
You cannot expect if you like go to a shop and you get some sort of like biscuits for 10 rupees.
Yeah.
And if you try to maybe, I don't know, buy broccoli and you don't get it for 10 rupees. So that's not, if you get it for 50, it's like who did broccoli?
Yeah, it's sort of like when you go to a restaurant and a bowl of salad is, say, it's 350, 400 bucks, whereas a bucket of chicken is oily fried chicken is 250 bucks. Obviously, people are going to go for the bucket of chicken, right? They're not going to go for a bowl of salad because they're saving some money there. So I think your point of making healthier food more accessible and more cheap would be another way to go about it.
Yeah, I had so many internal fights over ordering the salad. Like,
oh, same, 400, same. Yeah.
400.
Yeah, yeah.
Salad.
Definitely.
It's lettuce.
Exactly.
Mostly the result is, I'll buy it. I'll get home, I'll buy it, and I'll make it myself. Yeah.
Exactly. And then never happens.
Yeah. And let's order a fried something tasty for 200 and eat it and be happy. Then eating a salad and being sad.
Exactly. And that's sort of like a thing that I think even kids learn at a very young age, right? Because when they are buying food, the parents also will look at the cost and they'll be like, oh, wait, this particular thing, it may not be super healthy, but at least it's not as expensive. So since it's not something that we're going to have often, let's go and buy this. And then if the kids like it and they, you know, constantly like force their parents to buy it, after a point, they will buy it. And once they get addicted, then they'll obviously keep having that. So I
think we need to like tell the listeners why we are talking about examples which appear to be like wealthy examples. Because right now, obesity is a rich man problem right now.
Yeah.
The poor, they do suffer from obesity, but not as much.
The percentage is, I think, significantly low. I think even in the NFHS data, it so shows that in India, at least the problem right now with respect to obesity is seen more in the urban population than in the rural population, right?
Yeah, and even more in the wealthier.
Right, right.
The wealthier population have.
Right, right. So it makes sense for us to, like, you know, focus more on it right now. And because even now, the India poor still suffers from malnutrition, which is why the schemes and stuff are still ongoing, and we still are battling with that. We are not by another thing we want to make clear to our listeners is also that by talking so much about obesity, we're not dismissing that the focus on malnutrition should not. We're not saying that there should not be focus on malnutrition. We're not dismissing that problem. It's just that since obesity is another problem that we need to start thinking about and coming up with the ways of managing it before it becomes like a huge crisis in the country.
Yeah, I think we ourselves are working on undernutrition, malnutrition. I'm working on a project in Karnataka, and you're focusing on tribal areas, right?
Yeah, I am focusing on tribal areas. I've not started it yet, but I aim to start it sometime soon. My target population is to see what are the schemes for malnutrition for the tribal population and what exactly is happening in that side. So I'll be starting that soon.
So we are putting our money where our mouth is. Yeah. Obviously, you have to prevent obesity from becoming as large an issue as undernutrition.
Definitely.
And it is obviously it's more easier said than done. Hmm. But you'll have to take, if you want to change the behavior of the population, if you want to prevent what you call that westernization. I read it somewhere in Japanese literature. They called it westernization of diet. Fast food, fast food and everything else. So right. But they wanted to prevent that, but their system was a lot different. They sort of the one good thing they did was they start to focus on children from a very young age. They provide them fruits. This is government funded and government provided fruits in schools. They do not allow sodas and too much sugary items in the canteen and stuff.
Right.
And they also try to make people aware of physical activity, and they make it fun. So it's not like in India where your maths teacher comes up and takes your game spirit away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a recurring problem here, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So we also do not focus too much on physical activity.
Yeah.
We should focus and you have to make people realize that physical activity is quite important for you. And regular physical activity is important even if you are within the desired BMI range.
Right.
Physical activity will also reduce the burden of obesity and its associated diseases.
Definitely. And I think to reiterate what you said, before this becomes a massive problem, it's okay to start early when we know that there are some initial signs about a certain thing, right? In sort of COVID terms, before it becomes a huge wave, it's better to start thinking of possible solutions.
Yeah, it's I don't think it's early. I think it's the perfect timing.
You're right.
It's you stop it before you have to spend a lot of your resources on changing people's behavior and trying to ban certain food items and stuff. If you make the population's diet and taste towards a more nutritious and healthier diet, there would be no need to regulate the market.
But
you won't have to ban Coca-Cola, Pepsi.
Yeah. So
that would be counterproductive, obviously. But I think something like putting a label on it will force Coca-Cola to make all of it.
These are actually some really interesting points, Harshit. And thank you so much for joining me on this episode and giving your insight about the NFHS data and the obesity and the problems associated with it. It was nice having you here with me.
Thank you, Priya. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And to all our listeners, stay tuned for the next episode. Thank you and goodbye. Stay safe.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.